Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me, as always, is Steve.
Hey, John. How's it going?
And our crypto bro, Sean. How are you doing?
Hey, John. I didn't know I had that title.
Yeah,
but
sure.
But I like it.
You'll turn it into a good thing, I hope. And our guest this week, we're lucky to have Humayun Sheikh, the founder and CEO of Metallix, who has a very interesting background and is working on some challenging problems with AI. Thank you for joining us on the podcast, Humayun.
It's a pleasure, guys, and it's great to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And you know, you're out of Cambridge in the UK, so thanks for making the time work with us. But as the seat of an intellectual powerhouse in Cambridge there, it sounds like you're in a good place to develop AI solutions.
Yes, and also, I mean, I've been in Cambridge now nearly 20 years, and I have been involved in several companies which have worked on, done stuff with machine learning and AI. Most notable is DeepMind, which sold to Google, and is quite well known. So yeah, I was involved in that. And several other startups who, soon might be doing more great stuff in AI.
Hopefully, DeepMind is third or fourth on your list of famous things that you've been involved with.
Yeah, I hope so.
Tell us a little bit about your companies. You have Fetch AI and now Metallix, which is powered by that same technology. What is Metallix and what problems are you guys solving?
Sure. So just a quick roundup on Fetch AI. Fetch AI is building a multi-agent system. And what that means is a system where agents can autonomously carry out tasks, learn from each other. What it effectively does is makes the whole system more intelligent by kind of giving the tasks to smaller edge entities, which can actually collaborate and work together to deliver a bigger task. So no complex integrations, intelligent connectivity, that kind of stuff. So, that's really the core of Fetch AI. But Metallix has been on my kind of passion stuff for quite a while because I, by trade, I have also been a commodities trader. And it's quite a weird mix. So I was, although I was very involved in gaming companies, which were developing some cool AI stuff and machine learning stuff. But on the other side, I was quite intrigued. So I got into it somehow, commodities trading, which then led me into algorithmic commodity trading. So that's my two halves of my life, professional life. And what is quite interesting is that it's a commercial issue, and I know it's nothing to do with AI as such. The commercial issue is that the exchanges which enable you to do trade commodities are very old-fashioned, and very little exists which enables individuals, and I'm sure you guys have all seen this GameStop scenario which happened, and how social trading came along. So we've been seeing this in commodities as well. People want easy access, lower barrier to entry. They want to be trading commodities because commodities doesn't mean physical commodities. I mean, we're going to have a lot of digital commodities. So again, just to kind of bring the two projects together, if you think about, let's say it's probably a bad example in COVID times, but hotel rooms or flight tickets, right? These are commodities effectively, and they should be traded like commodities, but at the moment they're not. So if you start thinking how this much grander scheme of things could happen where, although, booking a hotel is like kind of not a commodity, but is a commodity, that's when you start to see the effect of commodity trading. So you could hedge your holiday, for example, or your car, the price of your car you're going to buy in 10 years, you could also hedge it. So all these things kind of we've been wrestling with and trying to solve and find a solution. And that was the result why Metalex came about.
Very interesting concept there. I would love to hear sort of a use case based on this an example, maybe on like hotel rooms or something that is kind of a use case that we can understand a bit deeper as to how this would come out to play in the real world.
So if you think about what are the kind of things that make up a holiday, let's say. I mean, let's make it a bit more generalized. So you need fuel costs, you need hotel rooms, you need maybe you need food costs of some type. So let's say I want to I see the cost of grain going down, I see cost of fuel down, and I see these things happening, and I want to book a holiday, but I don't actually want to book a holiday. I want my agent to secure a price for a holiday today, and I might want to book it in 10 days, 20 days. I'm not in a rush to do it, but I want to secure it. So what Metalex would enable you to do is to hedge a instrument using an instrument which is called a travel instrument. You could actually say, right, I'm gonna buy $10,000 worth of a holiday, so I'm gonna take $10,000 worth of this instrument, and I'm gonna hedge it because I like the price today. So what that means is you're kind of managing your risk. So you can actually either go long or short on it, which means that you can actually say, okay, I'm gonna hold this. If the price goes up, I will, my instrument's price will also go up, which means that I can buy a holiday at a higher price because I've just made money on my instrument. So it's a hedging technique, right? So your listeners probably would relate to that quite easily. So you've just hedged your holiday. Now, you can't do that today. I mean, you have to book it, you have to put a deposit on it, but you don't know which one you're going to go with. You want the freedom to choose. So that's the kind of very simple example, but that doesn't mean that it has to be that simple. I mean, you could still trade aluminium, you could still hedge aluminium, copper, gold, silver. Another interesting point is a lot of people put gold and BTC in some kind of bracket, and you might want to take a position of BTC and gold at the same time, or you might say, no, I mean, I will take a BTC, gold, and something else. So you could actually build an instrument within like 10, 20 minutes, which you can then add liquidity and start trading, which means you can actually build much more interesting risk management tools that we've ever seen. And that's DeFi is what brings this whole thing to the market. And on top of that, how do you make this market liquid is using these autonomous market makers. So it's an evolution of this automated market makers, which just exist in the market, let's say Uniswap or Balancer. This is another step up from that, whereby you can actually hedge your products against a much more intelligent market maker.
Your background is also in commodities trading, so you have bring that expertise. Is this a problem that you saw needed to be addressed, or is this something where you saw the technology could address something and bring the market to the next level?
Okay, so my background is even in commodities. There is a physical commodities, and there's a paper commodities, which is like the instruments you trade. So I've got experience in both. So there's a couple of things which I can kind of draw attention to. As a physical commodities trader, if you're not big enough, then you have a problem because your barrier to entry is really high. You have to go through brokers. You have these exchanges which control. And to be fair, there is not much transparency. I mean, it's very difficult to get transparent pricing these days, especially where the liquidity in the market is low. So these big brokers or these big brokerage houses or these exchanges, although they kind of exist to enable this, they're actually a hindrance now. They were of use in the beginning when the technology wasn't there. But what has happened is that they've created this barrier to entry where, small to medium enterprise is struggling to get a risk strategy, you know, risk management strategy around futures contracts, for example. And that became very visible when I was trading physical and paper commodities. So that's one big problem we're trying to solve here, that the barrier to entry should not be there. We should remove that barrier to entry. And the second thing is, which is quite interesting, is the liquidity itself. So if an exchange wants to create an instrument, then you have to build this liquidity model around it. So you need market makers, you need market participants, because you need counterparties, because without a counterparty, you're taking all the risk. Then you need the liquidity, you need actual cash coming in, because you have this margin, variation margin or initial margin. And for the people who are managing this risk and buying these instruments, they have to manage their cash flow quite strongly. Why? Because, you know, there is margin calls coming all the time. So if you combine all of these things, it becomes quite difficult for people to actually participate in such a market if you're not really all the time in it, or that's not your core business. So it doesn't actually enable people to do risk management in the right way. Actually, they put themselves more at risk by doing so. So that, if you then look at what's happening in the DeFi space and crypto space, it's quite interesting, because you now just have these liquidity pools coming up where you can actually pull in the liquidity and not small amounts. I mean, yes, in the scheme of things, it's nothing. But I think there's a lot of growth to come. But hundreds of millions of dollars can come into these liquidity pools, and you can pull them in, and you can actually use them as a collateral to create these instruments, so that people can easily deploy these new instruments and actually trade them in the real world. So, you know, I can create a market for copper in minutes and pull in liquidity at the same time by offering some liquidity rewards. So combined these two concepts, the solution is just glaringly obvious, because you have to do it.
So this is bringing together a blockchain-based decentralized exchange with AI-based autonomous market makers, the AMMs, that are optimizing your needs with the market, and then you're bringing in liquidity providers. Is that right?
Yes, and then you combine the liquidity providers from the DeFi space, because at the moment, liquidity is going into only crypto assets. They don't have to just be crypto assets.
So a company with, just to stay on the hedging scenarios that I know better, I guess. So if a company has like some kind of, like maybe the electricity, like you were saying, needs for their operations, they could hedge that in a way that they couldn't right now. Or if they have some unusual type of a vendor or source or input, they could hedge that, and the AMM will try to find the most efficient way to do that within the exchange and within this market. And if it's more unusual, just the spread will be wider. It'll just cost a little bit more. The less common it is, would that be true?
That's correct. Yes, if the liquidity is low in that particular instrument, then the spread would be wider. If the liquidity is sufficient, then spread shrinks.
Will be tighter. Okay. All right. So this makes sense. I can see that for your business, and you know, it's expensive. It's difficult. It's a pain to do it through your bank. You have to be of a certain size, but this would bring this down a bit.
Absolutely. But I think people need to start getting a bit more involved in the decision-making to do. So for example, if you're buying a house, and at this point in time, if you don't have a hedge and you're taking a mortgage out, negative equity is, we've seen it many times. So, you know, there is nothing which enables them to do that today at a reasonable cost. So what my point here is that we have to bring all these different things, which are now becoming easier to implement, to the normal people who perhaps don't have that much of a technical understanding of hedging.
Now, I have to ask, after this whole GameStop thing, what would prevent some people from pooling together and gaming the system or creating some crazy volatility or try to break the system? People are just trying to test everything these days. Is there any way, you know, what would be the GameStop version in this scenario?
Every system has its breaking point, I guess, but the way this would work is that it would, for people to start keep buying, it would escalate the price quite dramatically. And by that price escalation, the actual perpetrator who was trying to do it would also struggle because of all the collection of the fees. So the pool which is sitting there would actually be protected via the escalation of the fees. So they will keep playing more automatically. So, but you also, there is a different aspect to it whereby you can actually create instruments with kind of security things built in. So, you know, there is a limited amount of shares and that's all that system will sell based on the liquidity. If nobody puts any liquidity in it, then you wouldn't be able to escalate the price in the same way. So I think in one way it kind of reduces that barrier to entry, but in the other way, it actually kind of implements a framework out of which you would not be able to move effectively. But the kind of the regulatory built-in regulatory framework could just be put in place in the beginning.
So are you would you be subject to the same regulations and compliance as everybody else, or is there something different about this? And how much of a barrier is that going to be?
So we, US is always a difficult part of the world where—
Yes, it is.
So this wouldn't be probably available to US initially, but we're working hard to get that kind of done. But we have several legal opinions which kind of indicates that in the current state that we're developing it, and I'm not saying that in the future we'll add some more features and additional parameters which might need regulation, but currently it does not require any regulation. So we're exempt from regulation in the current state. And also, don't forget, this is it's a decentralized exchange where we don't have any control as such of people's money. There's no counterparties, and the system is pretty much autonomous.
Hopefully they don't make new rules just for your use case here.
Well, that would be a good problem to have, which means that we are successful and people are using it. So
right.
We're already preparing for that today, so we'll be ready when it comes.
This concept of liquidity pools really changing the game in DeFi and in the wider space is so pertinent to what you're talking about. I'd love to hear more about who are these new liquidity providers. I know you mentioned some market makers that have really paved the path to help allow what you're doing to happen. I'd love to hear who are these liquidity providers and where's the growth in that space that you see.
I'll split that into three different groups. So if you look at the DeFi space currently, most of the liquidity providers are coming from the crypto space, right? The BTC value appreciation, ETH value appreciation, and plenty of other crypto assets which have really appreciated. So what we're taking is a liquidity in form of a collateral. Or an asset which we can, which is liquid enough, and it could provide enough backing to a collateral token, a position token. So we work with position tokens. So you have long, short position, and we always try to get a collateral behind it. Now, so that's one liquidity provision whereby if the rewards are correct, if the spreads are right. So if you have people wanting to trade and willing to pay larger spreads, then your returns are going to be much higher, which will attract and draw these liquidity providers. So that's more the crypto side. Then you have the people who are market makers in traditional markets. Now, if when the markets become very liquid and the markets trading very liquidly, then on the traditional exchanges, the market maker's role disappears. So market makers are always looking for new markets to make. And although they will bring and they can pull in capital, to set up a new market today is very difficult. So they have to maybe go to smaller exchanges, second tier exchanges. They have to bring the traders together, and they have to bring the money into the pool, the capital into the pool. And then they start with OTC trading, which is all quite cumbersome. On our platform, the same market maker could start a new market, bring all of this together in 20 minutes. So that's how long it will take because of Ethereum being Ethereum at the moment. So on our own network, when people use it, Fetch Network or Smart Chain, or I mean, we're network agnostic, by the way, it will take much, much less. So they can actually bring in capital, their own capital. They can actually provide liquidity to their own market, and they can start a new market. And setting up that market is very easy. And they can onboard their own customers. They can onboard, they could just make it very open to the community. So that's the second type of liquidity provider we're targeting. And then you have the third one, which is, you know, there is plenty of people who would like to make a better return on their funds with the negative interest rates coming in, negative yield on bonds, looking for a not high risk, safer place for return. And you could, if you could enable them at a graduation of risk, you can enable them to come in and deposit as a passive depositor, then that's another section of the liquidity which you can pull in. But to do all of that, you have to be able to provide them instruments which they can understand. I mean, a lot of people, you know, in the category which I was explaining just now, don't know what to do with crypto. They don't know crypto. Most of the world doesn't know what crypto is or what DeFi is. So you have to make it very accessible to them. And that's that liquidity, which probably is the highest amount of liquidity that is available, but we haven't tapped into it.
You know, you're working on two fintechs at the same time right now. You're in a great space for it as far as capital and hiring. What do you find is the constraints, the thing that you need more of or is difficult to build up as you're building up these two companies?
I think the biggest issue is the, you know, just to be, to bringing it to the market, the biggest issue is the regulator. We'll talk about, you know, what building it means and how difficult that is. But to bring it to the market, the regulator is way behind anything. So I think that's one of the biggest hurdles. And if you're a project who wants to scale in the right way, who wants to reach to the right audience, it's quite important to have the support of the regulator. And if you don't have that, then it becomes very difficult. But on the flip side, what we have seen, and I think this is a good kind of a good story, good news for where we are at the moment, because if
we need that, yes, please.
The good side is that at least we kind of sidestepping the type of people big corporates take on. So at the moment, if you wanted to start a software company, I mean, you know, the amount of money we're paying, and you guys know really well, you know, West Coast is how horrendously expensive this is. Now, the good news is that we are now going remote working. You know, we can hire from anywhere, and there is no shortage of good people all around the world. So we don't have to be in the Silicon Valley to do it. There's a much more receptive attitude from VCs, from investors, on to remote working. And actually, I must say, during this COVID period, while remote working for me, I mean, we increased our productivity at least by 40%.
Oh, really? That much?
That's a huge number, right?
Productivity because people didn't have to commute or they had nothing else to do or?
Both, actually. So not having too much to do is also good, but only for limited periods, I guess.
Yeah, I think some of the concern is some of the benefits kind of spike up and then are drifting down now, at least in some cases.
Yeah, yeah.
You might have a more driven team since you guys are really building something new and challenging. It might be you might have people engaged a bit longer than other roles.
Well, perhaps, and we reward our people who get engaged with us. I mean, we don't. They're not just employees. They are very much part of the project. They're part of the team. They're part of the whole business.
Right, which is not always the case. I think you're going to get 3 resumes from us for pretty soon. Great. So it's great that you don't have a huge limiting factor. You know, I'm always paranoid about the regulators. How that has to that compliance function has to be built in. I think. And we've heard from our RegTech guests that it's better when that's planned in, that's baked into the core functionality of the fintech or the project. You know, of course, you don't want surprises.
But how are you guys finding at the moment? Is it quite? Do you have the same feeling? Is it similar? Is it? Do you feel this is a good, productive time at the moment? Because tech sector seems to be doing quite well.
I think it is. My view is mostly on the enterprise side. I work in fintech SaaS, and that's sort of my day job. And we've seen a lot of traction. I think that COVID basically accelerated a lot of the trends that we had seen in the past 2 to 3 years. But yeah, in terms of the broader technology sector, it's definitely. I think this is a great time. It's sort of it's the calm before something really takes off in the next year. And I can't wait to see what happens in say Q3 or Q4 of 2021.
No, yeah, I think it is a bit of a elastic. Things have been kind of artificially held down, and then it will bounce up strongly in the second half of this year. And tech is already taking over the world. I mean, that hasn't been held back at all. It's if anything, it's run rampant. far ahead of the rest of the economy.
Yeah, I agree.
And Sean, you've worked in some DeFi stuff as well, right?
I have, and this is what I think particularly interesting what you're describing, because this ecosystem is changing so rapidly, and you're really catching on a trend, and not just a trend, but like a fundamental shift in how these liquidity pools work, which open up these new markets. I think what you're doing is fascinating because you're providing liquidity, which is creating these markets for people. I'm very interested to see what you know, what new markets are created, and for the purposes of MetalX, I think it'll be really interesting to see what are those commodities, those items that are the most desirable when it comes to creating these additional markets. So be really interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, we're quite excited about it. So I think we'll leave the market to decide, really.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Good luck. Certainly wish you all the best with that. But I do have to ask one more question. What ran through your mind when the Google purchase of DeepMind was confirmed?
Well, we could have done better.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. thanks for joining us on the podcast. Certainly very interesting and a lot of interesting projects you're working on, bringing in so many things. And we wish you all the best. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It was great to speak to you guys.
All right. Please subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.